This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear. But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. Only in theaters June 14. Get tickets now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Literary Disco on Lit Hub Radio, episode 165, Coyote and the Shadow People. Today, we will discuss a classic of Native American storytelling, a story told for generations by the Nez Perce tribe, entitled Coyote and the Shadow People. This is Literary Disco, the last book club you'll ever need, where Todd, Julia, and Ryder, three old friends who love to read, debate, and sometimes even agree. I am actor and filmmaker Ryder Strong. Joining me, as always, are novelist and critic Todd Goldberg and essayist and radio personality Julia Pistel. Hey, guys.
What's going on?
Hey, how's everybody feeling? I'm feeling good. Feeling strong. Feeling good.
Yeah, no dry cross here. So
feeling strong.
That's all we can hope for.
A lot of stuff going on in my life. I woke up. That's it.
Todd and I are both in the process of dismantling the things we lead for either 2 weeks or a year, which is really horrible. I just want to know the date when it's over, but we don't.
We don't. I mean, it's a so for listeners out there. So Julia owns and operates an improv theater in Hartford, Connecticut, and I direct a graduate school in creative writing at the University of California. So both of us have these secondary jobs with huge moving parts to them. And it turns out that when you're in charge, correct me if I'm wrong, Julia, people expect you to have answers.
Oh my God. Can I tell you guys how many nice, but just so romantic, hey, what are we doing? Are we going to close? Is my class going to be canceled? Are the shows canceled? Are the family shows canceled? Are the 9 o'clock shows canceled? Is the festival canceled?
Yes, everything's canceled. Cancel everything.
Yeah.
Just put it on hold. Oh.
But yeah, I felt it's sad because when people are afraid, they like turn to the leader closest to them. And unfortunately, they haven't learned yet that I'm a complete fraud sham of a leader who doesn't know the answers.
That is
bad time for imposter syndrome.
I'm sure that is not true. Yeah.
Rear its ugly head and reveal itself to be true that you are an imposter.
Well, this is the time.
What's awful about what you're dismantling too, Julia, is that like what we all want more than anything is entertainment and to be around each other right now. Like the idea of like, I've never craved a theatrical experience more than right now. It's like after 7-8 days of sitting in my house with only seeing my immediate family, it's like, I want to be in a crowded dark room laughing with people like so bad. And like, it just, it's so disheartening that we're not getting that.
Literally kill people. We would be sold out. It's awful. And like the weight of the decision, like if you close too slowly, like people will die. Blood is on your hands.
tell that to Kid Rock, who's still like, you know, having concerts in Nashville. It's like Kid Rock's rock and roll coronavirus cruise 89 or whatever. Like, what the fuck, man?
Well, I just hope that I helped some people by closing because I also know, of course, this is so much less important than saving who you can save, but like taking away people's community is really hard.
It's really
hard.
I mean, I have the unique joy actually of trying, like the MFA program that I run is online basically, except for when they're in residency twice a year. So 10 days in June and 10 days in December. And I don't know if our June residency is going to happen or not. But you know, it's business as usual for the students, you know, academically, but that doesn't really matter, you know, because they still need to see and talk to other people that they would normally see and talk to. There's, you know, these I say kids, but these are, you know, these people in their 40s. You know, they hang out a lot. You know, most of them live in Southern California. They spend a lot of time together. They go to get coffee. They, you know, they're going to each other's events. You know, there's a whole social life that's related to this MFA program, both for the students and the alums. It's all very closely knit. It's really different than what the three of us experienced as grad students together. And part of that is because it's this thing that I've sort of put into place. Like, hey, like, you are each other's people. Go out and support each other. Go out and do stuff. You know, go experience culture with one another. And when that closes down, as we all know, writers tend to be introverts. And that you can be an extrovert with your introvert friends, but without them, you're just an introvert. And so, you know, we're setting up all of these... you know, Zoom meetings and, you know, hangouts and, you know, I'm trying to get my students and my faculty to create content that we can put online for our communities and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But first, I just want to make sure that everyone is good and safe. And, you know, I know that there's people that are in bad relationships and, like, oh, I'm worried about that. You know, all these other things that go along with it that you don't really think about as in terms of just like, oh, hey, I'm a professor of creative writing. But I'm also like, I know all these people intimately and I know their lives. And so I'm worried about all of them. And so it's, you know, it ends up being, I have, of course, my own anxieties, but I'm also trying to mitigate what I can for these folks in this big thing that they're a part of that isn't going to stop. You know, the University of California is not going anywhere. So it's a lot, man. It's a lot. It's all, I mean, to just to try to be a calm port in whatever storm you can for the 15 minutes you're talking to that person on the phone, I think there's value in that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Which is also why today on Twitter, someone in our Literary Disco mentions said hi to me. And so I recorded a 3-second video saying hi back to them. And it is absolutely horrifying.
Wow. Yeah,
that is nice. I did watch it. That is more terrifying than... That is not reassuring. That
it's
is
not reassuring at all. That is, no, it's not. You don't want to just be opening up Twitter, then all of a sudden I'm there talking to you and shit. That's bad fucking energy.
Well, my job, which is just writing right now, is also completely dismantled. Not only because it's impossible to focus when you have a child at home, right, and childcare and the normal, but like all that aside, I've also noticed everything I'm writing has changed.
Yeah.
Because I'm writing a screenplay for a studio and I write a scene like, hey, and they two characters slap five.
Right.
And then I go, well, wait a minute. Does our movie take place pre-coronavirus?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I have to incorporate social distancing? Because God, this movie, when it gets released, is going to be 2 years from now. I'm like, well, I can't even think that far ahead. Well,
no,
then what's the
no
point of writing the script? No. Like, but what I'm realizing is that the potential cultural value of what I'm working on might be a dead project. Like, right, movies that are in the pipeline, like mine. I mean, I'm rewriting a screenplay that has been, you know, in process for 9 months at this point. Like, I'm paid for this rewrite. I have to do it. I'm doing it. But it also might be a completely pointless exercise because I have a feeling studios are going to throw out everything. Like, what? I don't know. Have you guys seen like commercials lately? Like, they're outdated. Like, everything right feels like from another era. But
the other side of it too is that no one's working. So
yeah.
So for the average person probably doesn't know this, but like if you're shooting a TV show or a movie, there's 300 people standing behind the actors at different parts of that, in that room, you know, like a whole company moves to go shoot a scene. It's 200 people, right, Ryder?
Yeah.
They're moving around.
Yeah. I mean, a full budget.
It's a sitcom,
but I mean,
right,
but yeah, no, usually, I mean, you're at least 50 people gathered together in any crew situation, yeah, most likely on television and films. Yeah. 100, 150 people easy. And that's just, yeah. So it's shut down. Everybody I know is shut down. Everybody, yeah, nobody's working in production right now. One of my good friends was directing her first feature film, shot 2 days, 2 days into her film. Everything was finally going and she had to pull the plug, you know,
so
studio feature.
Crazy.
And it's a tragedy, you know, now she's home with her kid, like all of us, just quarantined. Yeah.
Yesterday, so my house backs up to a golf course And I was standing outside my backyard, and there was like six old dudes playing golf. And I was like, it's all I could do not to scream, "You're all gonna be dead! Go home!"
And they were old, right? They were like 60
old.
Plus.
They're super
old. Like the worst people to be out
mingling.
Idiots.
But I've already made the mistake of looking on Nextdoor to see who doesn't believe this is real, and it's all like 75-year-olds saying, "Gavin Newsom doesn't tell me when I leave my house." So it's like, well, that's going to solve itself pretty soon.
Exactly. Like, you're selecting out of the gene pool. Yeah. Like, idiots.
God.
Well.
Yeah.
All right.
But you know what would be helpful is if we had some sort of broader understanding of where death comes from.
Yeah, wouldn't that be good?
Interesting. I'm sure we're the first generation to ever have to think about death, right?
For sure.
No one's ever really confronted their family dying or how death works.
No.
All right, so here, you know what I want to do? I'm going to record myself telling the story after we're done. So we'll take a break now, and we'll just tell Justin to insert what I record after we, because I wanted to actually just tell the story.
Okay.
And then we'll come back and have our discussion.
All right.
As if I told it, because it's short enough.
All right.
Coyote and the Shadow People. So Coyote and his wife were living there, and she became ill. She died, and Coyote was incredibly, incredibly sad. For a while, all he did was cry every day, all day, for his wife. And then the death spirit came to him and said, "Coyote, do you miss your wife?" And Coyote said, what do you mean? "Of course, yes, I miss my wife. I'm crying for her every day." And the death spirit said, "Okay, well, listen, I can take you to where your wife is. I can do that. But, and this is essential, this is really, really important, you have to do exactly as I say. I'm like, seriously, you have to listen to me." And Coyote said, "Of course, my friend, I am hanging on every word. Don't worry. Take me to my wife. Let's go." And they started walking. After a little while, the spirit said, "Coyote, I just want to reiterate, you have to do everything I say. You have to listen to me." Coyote said, "Trust me, I miss my wife so much. I'm gonna follow every one of your commands." Coyote couldn't see the spirit clearly. All he really saw was like a shadow of a person. And they came over to a plain, and suddenly the spirit said, "Oh, there's so many horses. It looks like a roundup." "Yeah," said Coyote, even though he couldn't see anything. "Yeah, there's just so many horses." And that seemed to make the death spirit happy. So they kept walking along, and then the death spirit said, "Oh, look at all these berries." And Coyote couldn't see anything, but he played along and said, "Oh, yeah, these berries look delicious. Come on," said the ghost spirit, "let's eat some of them." And he reached up in the air and bent down a branch that Coyote couldn't see and started eating berries. So Coyote played along. This is what he had to do, he figured. So he reached up in the air and mimed grabbing a branch and then started pretending to eat invisible berries. These are good. After they had eaten for a while, they moved on. "Now we're about to arrive," the ghost said to Coyote. "This is a very, very long lodge, and your wife is in here. You just have to wait and let me ask for somebody." So in a little while, the ghost came back to Coyote and said, "Yes, they have your wife in the lodge. We're going to go through the door, and you have to do exactly what you see me do. I'm going to take hold of the door flap, raise it up, bend low, and enter. And then you have to raise the door flap, bend low, and enter." Coyote did exactly as he was instructed, even though he couldn't see anything. Now it happened that Coyote's wife was sitting right near the entrance, the ghost said. And so the ghost said to Coyote, "Here, sit here next to your wife. And your wife is going to prepare food for us." And Coyote couldn't see anything. He was just sitting on the open prairie, nothing in sight. And the ghost said, "Oh, she's prepared our food. Let's eat." And the ghost reached down and brought his hand to his mouth. And Coyote couldn't see anything but prairie dust. But he did the same. And when they had finished their meal, and apparently Coyote's wife had put the food away, the ghost said, "So things work differently here. We are on a different timeline. In the land of the living, when it's daylight, it's darkness here. And when it's darkness for us, it's daylight in the land of the living." And
that's when Coyote noticed it was getting darker and he was starting to hear voices. He could hear whispers all around him. And then, as it became fully dark on the prairie, Coyote realized he could see the lodge. He was inside of a long, long house, and there were fires burning everywhere, and he could see people. Not quite. They were more like shadows of people. But he could also see his wife was sitting right next to him. Coyote was overjoyed. He had never been happier. He could suddenly visit with all his old friends who had died years ago. He spent the whole night just walking from fire to fire and marching up and down the aisles, seeing all these old friends and catching up on what they've been doing and telling them all about his life. And then dawn started to approach, and the ghost approached Coyote and said, "All right, Coyote, our night's falling, and in a little while, you're not going to be able to see us, but you got to stay right here. Don't go anywhere. Just stay here, and in the evening, you'll get to see us all again." And Coyote said, "Yes, I'm totally going to listen to you. I mean, where else do I want to go? I've got nowhere else to be. I am spending my day right here." So the sun rose, and Coyote found himself alone in the middle of the prairie, and he spent the whole day there, just dying in the heat, thirsting for water, but he didn't move. Coyote stayed there for several days. All day long, he would suffer, miserable in the heat, but every night, he would get to be with his wife and his old friends in the lodge. It was a wonderful time. And then one day, his ghost friend came to him and said, "All right, tomorrow you're going home, and you're going to take your wife with you." And Coyote said, "Yeah, that's great. I mean, I love it here. I'm having such a good time. I kind of want to stay." "Yeah," the ghost said, "but you got to go tomorrow. And listen, you really, really have to not do stupid things. Don't give in to any weird ideas. I'm going to tell you what to do. And you just have to listen to me. You have to trust me. Don't get all Coyote on me." "Absolutely," said Coyote. "All right. It's going to take you 5 days to get home," said the ghost. "And your wife is going to be with you. You're going to have to cross 5 mountains with your wife by your side. But you must never, never touch her. Don't let any impulses or desires take over. You can talk to her, but you can't touch her. And after 5 mountains, when you've descended from the 5th mountain, your wife will be home with you." So when dawn came, Coyote and his wife left. And at first, it seemed like he was traveling by himself, but he was dimly aware of his wife's presence as she walked behind him. They crossed one mountain. And now, Coyote could start to really see her. She was like a shadow. And then they crossed the 2nd mountain. They camped every night at the foot of the mountain. So Coyote's wife would sit on one side of the fire, and Coyote would sit on the other. And each night, her form appeared clearer and clearer. And the death spirit who had sent them began to count the days and figure out how far Coyote and his wife had gone. "I hope he does everything right," the spirit kept saying to himself. And then Coyote and his wife were on their last night. And now, for the first time since she had died, she was real. There she was, in the flesh, no longer a shadow person. She was there. He could see her in the firelight, alive again. And Coyote was overwhelmed with joy and love and desire. Once the impulse had taken control of his body, he couldn't stop himself. He leapt to his feet and rushed to his wife to embrace her. And his wife cried out, "Stop! Stop! Coyote, don't touch me! Stop!" It was too late. Coyote rushed over to his wife, and right as he touched her body, she vanished and returned to the Shadowland. And when the death spirit found out about Coyote's folly, oh, he was so pissed. You inveterate doer of this kind of thing, I told you not to do anything foolish. This is so Coyote of you. In just a little while, the human race is coming, and you've spoiled everything. Because of you, now death is permanent." Coyote just wept and wept. But he made a plan. He said, you know what, tomorrow I'm going to go see them all again. And so he started back, and he recognized all the places that the spirit had shown him before. He found the place where the spirit had said he saw the horses, and Coyote played along. He said, oh, look at all the horses. It totally looks like a roundup. And he kept walking until he knew he was at the spot where they had eaten the berries. And so he said, oh, look at the good berries. I can't wait to eat them. And he pretended to bend down a branch and eat some berries. These taste good. And finally, he made it to where the lodge had stood. And he said to himself, okay, now here's where I hold the door flap up. And I bend my way down and I sit. Oh, look, he said, my wife has prepared food for me. And he pretended to eat, going through the motions again. And darkness fell. And Coyote waited. He wanted to hear those whispers. He looked all around, looking for the fires. There's nothing. He was alone. Just a coyote sitting on the prairie in the dust. He stayed there all night, but the lodge never appeared to him again. He never saw his wife or his old friends again. And the death spirit never returned to him. Now we're back.
All right. Oh my God, Ryder.
Wasn't that amazing? Moving.
That was so powerful. I love the bit about the coyote.
You're a very experienced actor. Incredible.
Yeah, you should do voiceover work more often. Yeah. That was almost as good as the hobo from the Hardy Boys.
Oh, I did the whole thing in the hobo voice. You didn't catch that? What was my hobo voice? I don't even remember.
It was like a mixture of like a pirate. Like a Midwest pirate.
All right, guys. So this has been one of my favorite stories forever. And I've been thinking about it a lot lately. And so that's why I wanted to bring it up for Literary Disco and share it with our listeners and share it with you guys. So I'm really curious. What do you think?
I'd never read it before. And as you both know, I love myths.
Yeah, I've been waiting for this.
It was fine.
Oh my God, really? That's all you got? It was fine. All right, Julia, let's just skip over Todd, go to right okay. to you.
Yeah, I no problem. Thoughts.
It was fine. I mean, as far as the myth goes, not a bad myth.
Okay, so... So I.
Well, hold on. Let's just take a second. Well, hold on. We have to go back to that. What do you mean when you say myth? Like when you say when you dismiss this as a myth, what are you doing? Like, what are you talking about? Like, because it's made up, it has no value to you?
No.
No, it's that tone. It's that tone. I know what you mean.
Yes, it's the tone. I don't know what it like. So of course you know it's. It is actually a story that is made to be told out loud because, in fact, it is a transcribed story, right?
Exactly. That's why I wanted to tell it. Yeah, because I want to actually – I'm not going to read it. I'm just going to tell it like because right. The whole point is that the story is still living. You're supposed to right. retell.
Yeah, so it's a talk story, which is – I mean, that's cool. But, like, it's a little heavy-handed. Sort of knew what was going to happen. It didn't move me. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, that's interesting. I was watching a thing the other day that had the story of the lakes in New York State, Lake Cuyahoga, and how the myth is that, the Native American myth is that the spirit ran its hands across the ground and created the Finger Lakes of that part of the country. I thought that was cool.
Okay.
Right.
Wow, Todd.
We're getting nowhere. Julia, okay. What do you got? Any thoughts?
So I am fascinated by... Okay, so I just saw Hadestown, which is the musicalized version of Orpheus and Eurydice, which is very similar myth.
I would have liked to see that.
And then, what's that, Ted?
I said I would have loved to have seen that. That sounds great.
You might have actually liked it because it's written by a singer-songwriter. So that's how to communicate anything to you is through sad guitar.
I might have liked that. Yeah. James Taylor.
Anais Mitchell's. It's really good. But and then of course there's Lot's wife turning into a pillar of salt in the Bible, and I'm so curious about and moved by this common thread that's, I'm sure, in a million cultures, which is like you could almost have what you wanted as long as you don't ask for too much by looking right. back or reaching out. And what does that mean? I don't know. I feel like I have not personally experienced, I guess the longing for that person to be back is so much that you can't resist, but I'm trying to put this myth into something that's like in my lived experience, and I don't know, it's hard to do that.
Well, I mean, it's the reckoning with heartbreak, you know, that like yeah. you like you have to you can't engage in magical thinking,
right?
That you have to actually accept the trauma and the heartbreak of your life.
Right.
And so, you know, in truth, of course, I do find that story to be a good sort of lesson you could teach a young child or something. And it's, you know, of course, it's salient for all of us. We're all going to lose someone and wish that we could get them back. And it's basically Pet Sematary, you know, like it's the same story. So we should just read Pet Sematary.
You would enjoy it a whole lot more.
It's not Pet Sematary because it's not literal. So like in all of these things, you know, you can't actually see the thing or touch the thing that you want, you know. Right. And that's what I love about this story are these lines like, let me find one. They had arrived now near the place of the dead. The ghost knew that Coyote could see nothing, but he said, "Oh, look, such quantities of service berries." And yeah, it's asking us to trust that things are there that we can't see. And that's right. incredibly moving, you know?
Yeah. And also the power of belief to change perception. So mm-hmm. you want something to be true. So therefore you see it even when you don't see
right.
it.
Right.
You know, like, we've discussed ghosts in the past, mm-hmm. In the afterlife in the past. And I know I've said this before, but like, I didn't believe in the afterlife until I fell in love. And mm-hmm. so you fall in love and you begin to alter your worldview. You know, you begin to, of course I believe in the afterlife. Of course I believe in ghosts because the person I love the most, if they die, it can't just be a door that closes behind you. There right. has to be something else. And that's, you know, that's what the story is. It's the engagement of magical thinking, the perception of reality, the desire to not see the truth of the world that's presented to you.
Right. I guess one question I have, and Ryder, maybe you could put this in a better context for me, is like, I'm interested that this is a coyote story. So how does this fall into the trickster motif? You know, yeah, this is just sad.
Oh, Jesus.
What?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
The term trickster is enough to make me want to put my head through a fucking wall.
Why?
So just do it so
what
right.
What does that mean to you?
The whole, I can't tell you how many times I've had to sit through a graduate lecture on the
trickster yeah.
where someone's like, I'd like to discuss this as it relates to the trickster myth. I'd like to kill myself.
Oh. Okay, well, Ryder and right. I will be sure to not look at you so you still exist in your afterlife.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like that's like the thing that's so fascinating about this story and a lot of yeah. other trickster stories is that that as opposed to
say it again,
you know, like
say trickster again, motherfucker.
Right, well, I'll say I'll make it even worse. I'll call it this is a trickster transformer,
okay.
or maybe if you put it this way, you call it a trickster cultural hero. Yeah, there's like a bunch of terminology, but the idea that, you know, in Native American stories, a lot of times the trickster is, you know, is this destabilizer who fucks things up and is super gross or funny or weird and like tests cultural boundaries God. And like pushes
I'm
people.
The trickster.
And it's like, yeah, you are. You, yes, you are the trickster of literary disco. Bad fucking
Definitely.
Energy.
Oh my God.
But you know, the best part about every trickster story,
Jesus Christ, yeah,
The best part is when the trickster is also the creator, you know, a creative force. Mm-hmm. So it's like, by not following the rules, Coyote has created the most human circumstance.
Death, right.
Right. Like if Coyote could have accomplished this mission, we would all be able to have our loved ones forever. And mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. that idea is just so unsettling to me. And, mm-hmm. and something that I think, like, you know, a lot of European Western literature, like, doesn't have cultural heroes like that in the same way, that Coyote is the creator. Like, he is a creative force, but mm-hmm. he's also a culturally destabilizing force. He's somebody who can't follow the rules.
Right.
So it's like, to me, that is like the most human of stories, you know, as opposed to like, the Orpheus myth, or, you know, where you have these like sort of heroic warrior like characters creating the culture. It, mm-hmm. it, having Coyote be the force of creative occult is just, to me, that makes this myth way more relevant. You know, it makes it really not like kind of a myth to me. It makes it just like a great story that everybody can relate. Like, everybody can relate to Coyote wanting to see his wife, and also everybody can relate to Coyote not being able to withhold. And then like his desire, like what I love about this version, because there's a bunch of different versions of this story. There's like ones where Coyote is carrying a box with his kids' bones because he's trying to bring his kids back from the dead. And, you know, he ends up chasing a bug. So he fucks that up, and the kids' bones don't come back to life. And so he loses it. And then there's one with like him and Eagle, and like him and Eagle have some kind of bet or something. Oh yeah, it's all, but you know, but what I like about this one is that last moment of him like going back and doing it like again. Yeah. Like that to me is like, that is the human condition. It's like, we were always going to keep trying to do the rituals. We're going to keep trying to follow the rules, and we're going to listen to the cultural authorities around us. Like, in this case, it's a ghost death spirit, but like, you know, we all have somebody telling us, just follow these rules and you'll get what you want, especially as kids. And then like, We don't follow the rules because we're human. And I guess the reason I've been thinking about this story is because it also involves like a prohibition of touching, which in our social distancing time right now, I'm thinking a lot about. And I'm thinking about how like I can't be, you know, like we're going to be around a lot of people dying whom we can't be around right now. Like there are going to be people dying left and right because of a disease that we are socially distancing from. And like, this story really, really like resonated with me right now. It's just like, honestly, like it just popped in my head last week and I can't stop thinking about it. And like, now I've been like diving into all these books about these kinds of stories. And like, I don't know. I just think it's important. I think it's important to retell stories like this I don't know. Yeah, exactly like you said, the idea of this trickster figure, but recognizing ourselves in that figure and like ourselves, like, I guess because I do feel like we are rebuilding our culture right now. Like, that's kind of going to be our job. Time. Yeah. And like, but
thank God we have a transcendent leader to guide us through it.
Right. That's the thing. It's like, it's falling on all of us right now to take some responsibility for what kind of world we want to have. And,
right.
And so like a story like this to me is just getting at the heart of that and like, and underlining that challenge. And like, we have to keep trying. We have to keep, you know, keep making rituals and keep trying to follow the rules or break the rules or do whatever it is that's going to like keep a creative force. And like, Coyote as a creative force is fascinating to me. And like, stories like this one really resonate.
That's good, Ryder. Wow.
That's a good point. So I changed my point of view. Yeah. Fine.
Well, I love it because you're. I love that you're right. You are a trickster figure. Like, your sense of humor is very destabilizing. You love to push boundaries, and you look at that as actually a constructive force, not as a destructive force. Like, you think of yourself as like, I'm tearing down boundaries positively because that reinvents, you know, new values or makes people reinvestigate their existing ones. And I like, that's the whole point of trickster stories.
Shit.
Yeah.
So making a mockery of something is a trickster thing.
It's in the title. I mean,
shit. I mean, another thing, Ryder, to your to your point, Oh, God. Mapping onto this current moment is this feeling like the only way to make it through to where we want to make it is to not do anything. And that is just antsy and itchy and feels impossible right now. Like to ask people to do the best thing by doing nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. Resist.
It's so interesting. I did not make that connection. And now I want to go back and reread.
I mean, when he has to sit with his wife for 5 days of camping or, you know, and not touch her, and she's becoming more real. Like, that's the way we are all feeling right now. Like, that's I'm like, my poor son is wanting to just be around his friends so bad right now. And all we have is FaceTime. And I keep thinking about this, like, ghost image of Coyote and his wife. Every time I see my son, like, talking to his buddy on, you know, FaceTime running around my house, I'm like, oh my God, we're living in this world now where this is our reality, and we have to resist the urge to like hug each other or shake hands or just meet up and have dinner.
I've been missing my siblings a lot lately. Like, we've all been checking in with each other, and my sister's husband is very sick, and you know, like, the idea that if I were to like break the laws or whatever and drive to Los Angeles to see my siblings, I couldn't even touch them when I saw them. You know, like, that, it's so hard to wrap your mind around that. We had an engagement party for my niece. It seems like it was 7 months ago. It was 3 weeks ago. And like, that was the last time I think I touched someone that was not my wife, was on that night.
Wow.
And it was February 28th. And today, for listeners, we're recording this on March 18th. It seems like a whole other lifetime ago. And, you know, now we couldn't even have that party. There were 25 people at that party. We couldn't even have that party. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. All because of Coyote.
Mm. Another thing about this story and stories like this in general is their present tenseness.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the whole point of, you know, the story exists in this, like, what they call like myth time or a mythic time before humans exist. But it's really like a present, even the trickster themselves is sort of like a constant present tense. Like,
don't
they
you
are
fucking say it again.
Why not? Sorry. Coyote. All right. Coyote.
Don't you fucking say it again.
He is constantly living in the present. He is incapable of seeing into the future and planning ahead. And he's incapable of taking the traditions from the past. Like, he is sort of like, you know, an id figure, if you will, if you want to put it into Western terms, right? Like, he's right. This, like, constantly, like, I just want to do the thing, and I can't I just do it right now, or how do I, you know?
See,
and
I'm
like,
not a trickster because I'm ruled by the anxiety of death.
Right. But I also, like, I am finding, and we've been talking about this, we talked about it a little bit off mic, I am keeping myself in the present tense right now. Like, I can't think of the future without being overwhelmed. I can't think, like, 2 weeks into the future without getting really, really scared and, like, panicky. And like, I think we're all kind of in that space. So I love that stories and oral storytelling in particular is a way to sort of stay present and to stay – to force these, like – conditions of death or loss into a present tense circumstance where you're sharing it with another person who's telling you the story and you're imagining the story. And I don't know, like, you know, I think podcasts are going to go up, hopefully, because I think we're all kind of craving that, the sense
just
of,
to
like,
hear someone
belonging.
Else's voice.
Yeah. You know, but also, like, the idea that we exist in the present together and that we're all, you know, that's why I hope this episode gets out within the next couple of days, because it's going to be so outdated. Within a week, the reality of how rapidly things are changing right now.
Yeah, everything seems. Every morning I've been waking up. I've been asking this really though of my wife, and I know I've said this on the show before. Like, pretty much since November of 2016, I've woken up and asked Wendy, "What's the status of our democracy?" But now she's been telling me. Like, what did I miss in the 9 hours that I was asleep, or however long it was, when I didn't wake up in the middle of the night screaming?
Yeah.
Yeah, everything seems so dynamic. But, you know, the nice thing about actually reading a story like this and reading literature in general is, you know, not to undervalue what we're going through, but this too shall pass. You know, there is going to be another side. We are going to come out some other end. I don't know how changed we'll be, but this is a story that's existed for a very long time, which means we have existed for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's, you know, there's value to understanding the permanence of some things, but man, it's tough when you watch the news and X number of people are dying every single day. You know, it's hard to stay upbeat about stuff, but you got to be upbeat about the little victories every single day. Like, hey, I didn't eat all the cookies. I could have. I didn't.
I think it's going to be, I mean, it's really amazing how rapid, this is the most rapid social change I bet anyone alive has ever experienced. In the United States, let's say. But imagining life afterwards, it's going to be an after, you know? And I, like, yeah, as recently as like a week ago, for the last like year or so, people have been like, how are you? What's new? And I've been like, everything's good. I don't have anything to say. I'm riding the wave. Like, I'm saving my money. I got my fun jobs. I have my cool hobbies. I have my nice family. The end. And now I'm like, wow, well, glad I appreciated it because it's already like insane. Yeah. So this
if you were complaining that you didn't get to live through history, last four fucking years, man, pretty good history.
I've never complained Jesus. That. That's a stupid God. Thing to complain about.
I totally agree. Remember the 90s when history slept? That was a good time.
Yes, I
also,
do remember.
Also in the 90s, racism was over, guys. Don't you remember that?
That was so cool.
That nice feeling. We could just pat ourselves on the back. Oh, we solved that problem.
That's done.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Jesus. Just the veil that was over our eyes.
So, we should tell people what we're going to do, though, that we've got a big project coming up, right? Yeah. We should mention that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next up, middle March.
We're going to read a book that is long, I guess, right? Middle March is long.
Mm-hmm.
And it was written during the plague. Was it written during the plague? I don't know.
No. Victorian.
Ah, the victory.
You're about 500 years off, but onward and upward.
I get a little lost in the whole what was going on in Britain. We're going to read Middlemarch, and we're going to do a bunch of mini episodes on it over the course of however long it takes us to read it. And you all are invited to read along with us. We'll put out a little schedule of how much we're reading so you can stay up to date with us.
Order your copy from an independent bookstore that's delivering.
Yeah, if you guys or go get online a Kindle right now to bookshop.org, that's a really good one. It's all independent booksellers. They are selling books and shipping them out right now. These independent bookstores, they need your money. Man, they really do. And Amazon, as of today at least, is holding back some of the non-essential items for shipping to concentrate on food and medicine and porn. So you know, get your books from somewhere else, or of course you can always get an ebook if you need to. Those are simple. Actually, Middlemarch might be Project Gutenberg. Is it?
I'm not sure, but it's the kind of book you want to have in your hands.
You want to have a physical copy if you can, but yeah. I don't know. I'm not an e-reader.
Neither am I. Yeah.
But just so our listeners know, and so Todd knows, George Eliot, a woman.
Woman. Todd.
With the name George. Just before you stick your foot in your mouth saying, I'm reading that great book by that guy, George Eliot.
Huh. Interesting.
Well, we'll get into
Captain
it.
Picard's a girl. I don't even know what that means. I have no idea what that means.
Do people Todd's not know that George Eliot was very a woman? Quickly.
Yes, a lot of people don't know. You just read the name Georgia. I didn't know until we were in grad school. I think that was the first time I'd even heard of Middlemarch. And I was like, oh, this guy, George.
It's a lot of not stuff true. About furniture. I know that much. But we're still going to do a bunch of other little things, too. We're going to keep you guys as engaged as we possibly can as we stream towards our death.
No. As we save culture one book at a time.
Yes, as we save culture one book at
a time. Preserve culture as the world falls apart.
We're going to be right there with you. And periodically, if you leave a comment on our Twitter, I will, in my bedraggled state, leave you a video comment. That's horrifying.
I don't. Please don't. I was thinking about taking some photos of my bookshelves just for fun If you leave a comment on our Facebook, I'll send you a nice picture. That's nice.
Ryder will do nothing because he doesn't know where we keep our social
no.
media.
No.
I don't know. I'll take pictures of my books. I'll take pictures of my bookshelf. I'll send pictures of, like, how about I send pictures of my horrible handwriting notes in the back of my books just to confuse people.
Yeah.
I like that.
Literary Disco is produced and edited by Justin Alvarez for Lit Hub Radio. You can reach out to us directly on Twitter at Literary Disco. Happy reading, everybody. Thanks for listening. Yeah.